Clubhouse.
Welcome to Decorating the Set from Hollywood to Your Home with your hosts, Beth Kushnick and Caroline Daly.
Welcome to Decorating the Set from Hollywood to Your Home. This is Caroline. Hey, Beth.
Hi, Caroline.
So we're approaching the halfway point of season 5 already, and I'm so excited for this week's episode. We're going to pull back the curtain on an important part of television and film.
That's right. With this week's guest, my friend Andy Wheeler, we're diving into the world of production accounting. It may sound like a dry subject, but actually it's the position that's responsible for budgeting, how much money a production has or doesn't have.
Can I feel like doesn't
really,
right?
Affect my life.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. You know, I'm so glad we got to bring Andy on because it is a dry subject to most of us just thinking about it. But I loved this interview. We talked about how in a 22-episode season of television, you used to be able to defer your overrun cost down the road, but then you'd have to get creative as you go along. Can you tell us some of your best or wildest fixes or workarounds from budget overruns, things that you had to bring from home or favors you had to call in?
Well, I can't divulge every way in which I played mastermind with my budget from one episode to the next. It's gotten a lot harder when a TV series is only 6 episodes, but I used to, in the Good Wife, Good Fight days, do a lot of money hiding. The way we would do it is, you know, we would charge something that was really for one episode or maybe two to another episode. We sort of always made it work. When you get down to running on fumes, all my vendors know at the end of a season, I may not have all the money that I need to make it happen, but everyone's so accommodating and they help me out greatly.
That's awesome. So let's talk about this week's guest, Andy Wheeler. As you mentioned earlier, Andy is a production accountant. So I know that you and Andy met long ago and you have a long history. I want to discuss how you interact with a production accountant, because we've talked a lot about how your department has to interact with the director and a lot of other ones. But the production accountant part seems very vague to, I think, most of our listeners. Like, what does that really mean? And what makes Andy, why does he stand out as good at his job?
Well, he's so approachable, as you'll hear in the interview, and he really, really gets it. You know, he comes out from behind that locked door in the accounting department and makes everyone, I think, feel really comfortable and that he's a participating player in all of your department's concerns and worries and not just wielding the big financial hammer and coming down on you. He's really logical and really educated about the ins and outs of filmmaking because I think he loves it so much that we really connected. He's someone that I have a lot of respect for, and I think he really understands what everyone around him does, and he contributes everything he can. You know, it's really about brainstorming and trying different things and moving numbers all the time. And there's a part of that, even though math was never my strong suit, there's a part of that I really do enjoy.
I feel like he's like the puzzle piece maker. Like, it's like it all has to fit together, but he's got to like kind of smooth out edges to make sure it all fits together. And there's something about this discussion I'm really excited to share with our listeners, because I really think that it explores how many different layers there are to his job and the way that you could easily see how someone could be the villain of the whole set if they wanted to be, and how Andy finds a way to befriend everyone and help them, make them feel like it was their choice in what they're doing.
Exactly.
So stay tuned now for our interview with production accountant Andy Wheeler. Andy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Andy, thank you so much for coming on today and talking to us. Tell us about the job of production accountant. What does that mean?
Well, a production accountant is one of the three people that are hired in the beginning of a show. The head creative is hired, the producer who runs operations is hired, and the accountant is hired. And your job is to take the script, break it out, and figure out how much it's going to cost before any of the other departments are hired, and create the dollar amount that will become the dollar amount that you fundraise to. So the production accountant is responsible for the financial operations of a show. They're responsible for business affairs. They're responsible for human resources. And they work with the producer and the department heads to create the film.
So this is fascinating to me. Did you enter school thinking, okay, I want to be an accountant, and then just fell into the industry? Or is this something like you knew you wanted to get into the industry and this was an avenue for you to join?
Today, most people go to college and they move into the industry. When I started, I fell into the industry by going to a temp agency. It was early in the 90s, 1991, and Fox Television was first starting. They paid minimum wage, and I needed a job. I went to a temp agency, and they said, "Will you work for minimum wage as an accounting clerk?" And I said, "Okay, sure." And I got a job at America's Most Wanted, which was a kind of a hybrid reality television show where they did reenactments and they had news stories about real crimes. And that launched it.
Who didn't watch America's Most Wanted? I love that show. That's
Who's
amazing.
Still not watching it.
I know, right? That's awesome. And like, and a temp agency? I mean, gosh, Beth, who would think, right? Who would think? That's amazing.
Did you have any background in accounting?
Computers were just starting, and I knew how to use Excel and Lotus, which was another spreadsheet program. And so my job was basically to file and to use a spreadsheet program. It was the very beginning of the industry. The industry and accounting was just developing because computers were just coming online. A lot of people still did accounting on spreadsheets. So during that transition, I was involved in it, so I was able to grow with the industry.
Those were the days when I was writing my own check requests and purchase orders. It was...
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, it was so fun. It was so fun. I used to... I worked in accounting, and then the industry was really small then because there hadn't been an expansion of cable. You know, they had MTV, but they didn't have the last 40 channels that had been added on. So it was a really small industry. And I went to the executive producer at America's Most Wanted, Lance Heflin, and I said, "You know, I really want to be a producer." And he said, "Well, why don't you go out and try one?" And I went out and I learned to produce on America's Most Wanted. And I produced their little reenactments and I produced host raps. And that kind of stuff. And it gave me an experience that enhanced my accounting skills because all of a sudden I knew what it took to decorate a room. I knew how many people it took to move the furniture out and bring the furniture in. Or I knew what kind of location you needed to choose because you needed something that was bigger in order to shoot in it because there's a lot of crew in the room. So it was a great experience.
That's amazing. Yeah. I imagine that you have to interact with every department in the show, especially like the set decorator. So talk to us a little bit about the involvement that you have or the level of involvement. Like, are you actually a part, especially now that you're telling us you have this background, do you ever like suggest how, you know, choices that people are making because of costs and budget? Or do you like just have to be the one to be like, nope, you're going over or whatever and let them figure it out?
Well, the studio hires creative person, a finance person, and an operations person in the very beginning before a show starts. And you create the template of what the show is going to be. Once you've fundraised and you've financed your project, you start to hire your department heads. Your main goal as the accountant, once the fundraising is done, is to build the collaboration and to make sure that there is, you know, that each of the departments are able to be their best creative person. So you don't really get into, no, you can't have that couch is too expensive. You say, that couch is really expensive and it puts you over our template budget. Is there any way to bring that cost down? Or do I have to find another way to pay for that?
He's so reasonable.
Right. It's like, do my hands need to help your hands? Like, I love it. That's excellent. So your involvement is at a level of your sort of managing their choices, but you're not making those choices in any way. But obviously, you must need to know the ins and outs of a lot of the different departments in order to really put any kind of boundaries or parameters. Like you said, like, you have to have an idea of how much money it really costs. How much do you feel like you understand or that you actually get involved with each different department?
You're very involved with each of the departments, and you're really involved in a lot of decisions that people don't even know you're involved in. So let's say, I'm working on a project that has a restaurant in it. So I might say that Scripted is working in the kitchen area. I know it's very expensive to work for this art department to make a kitchen area. So I might say, well, why don't we move that to a dining room area? Can we do that? And if you can do that, then that will save $30,000. So you try to create ideas that you could offer to people to say, well, what if we do this or what if we do that?
You have a very diplomatic job, Andy.
Yeah, it's a lot of checks and balances, literally, being able to get everyone on the same page. And he's so logical. And I think it takes a great amount of skill. And Andy's very calm. So there's always an alternative with situations like that. Are there any ramifications when the show is heading over budget?
For sure. If you're doing an independent movie, you just can't be over budget because you won't be able to complete your film. If you're doing a studio project or a network television show, the studios lean you in order to hit your budget. They don't necessarily want you under budget. So they change the creative, which is scary because you're affecting creative because of the budget number. So they might not be changing the current script that you're on. If you're shooting episode 3 of a television show, they're going to change episode 7. And they're always planning in advance, and they're always projecting it out. And they're always saying, well, that construction department is always over $40,000. So what are we going to do? And I'll give you a great example. I did the show Ugly Betty. And Ugly Betty it started shooting in LA for the first season. And then something happened, and they decided to move it to New York for the second season. So it was a big show. It was a really important show to ABC, who is the distributor. And we were given the budget, like the price point that we had to make it at. And it really wasn't enough for the art department. Wasn't even close. If you know the show, it has huge expensive light fixtures. It had a hallway that you walked through. And every time you walked through, there were different setups in that room, different set decoration in that room. So it was a ginormous project. So as soon as we started, everything was huge. And so by the time you're on episode 3 or 4, you know that you're going to be over, by the end of episode 22, you're going to be over $4 or $5 or $6 million. So you have to start saying, okay, well, what can we do to save $6 million, which is a huge amount of money? You know, it's equivalent to the cost of a show. ABC is not going to just give you that money because it's a lot of money. They have to make their money back on that. So you say, okay, well, maybe what we can do is we can shoot everything in an elevator and create a bottle show.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny, Andy. I love that. I was like, it's time for the bottle episode where we all just stand in the elevator. That would save all your money.
it's funny because today everyone knows about it because they talk about it. But yeah, it wasn't always that way. You always had to figure out, oh, how are we going to do this? Maybe you shoot one less day. Here's a great thing that we did on Bear. We shot an entire episode seamlessly, no cuts. And you had to rehearse for it. It's a half an hour show. So I think we were budgeted for 4.5 days an episode. So we had 4.5 days to shoot it. And so we rehearsed it for 2 days. And then we shot the whole thing in one day. So you save 2 days of shooting or a day and a half of shooting, and it becomes a significant savings for the show.
Wow.
It's amazing because in the world of 22 episodes, as a set decorator, I always had this opportunity to put my overages in the next episode. And you coming upon episode 20 or episode 21, and, you know, that panic starts of how to get to your final number. It's so important.
That's when you start bringing the stuff from home, Beth.
bringing stuff from home.
Bringing in tables and blankets from home.
Asking for favors. But, you know, now with 6 episodes in a season or 8 episodes in a season, it's much harder to strike that balance.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like you guys have very much time to kind of, like you said, have a bottle episode or something, because you got to have things happening every single episode for those 8 or 10. You got to move the story forward. So that's complicated. Andy, it strikes me that you must have a very specific type of personality for you to not have like the Darth Vader theme music following you around everywhere you walk, because people must be like, oh no, Andy's coming. Oh no, he's going to tell me something I have to cut. Like, how do you strike that balance of still being someone no one like hides from? You don't have to eat lunch by yourself, but at the same time, like, you got to keep everybody on task here and on budget.
Well, that's so funny. I just did a project called The Border in Mexico. Unfortunately, it was a television pilot, and unfortunately, it didn't get picked up. But I was at the production meeting where all the department heads go to talk about the script and talk it through before we go out and start shooting it, and talk about the locations and the problems that are going to exist. While everyone is mingling, waiting for somebody, the director comes in, and I was talking to the DP, and the director comes in and he starts talking, blah, 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 blah. And he turns to me and he says, "Hi, I'm the director, and we haven't met. And who are you?" And I said, "Hi, I'm Andy. I'm the controller of the show," which is a kind of a fancy word for the production accountant. And he looks kind of puzzled, like what that role is, who that is. And the DP says, "He's the guy who says no."
Oh, no.
And while he's saying that, he lets go of my hand and he walks away.
Oh, no.
But, you know, with a little chuckle, of course. So
so sometimes you do have to eat lunch alone.
Sometimes you do eat lunch alone.
You know, right. And he's got to wear the T-shirt.
That's right.
You know, the great thing is that if you are a collaborator and if you spend time outside of your office and going to other people's spaces and understanding what they do and understanding that Beth can't just like pull something from stock because the measurement of the sofa matters. You know, I don't know that. I'm an accountant, right? So you have to go out and you have to communicate with people and you have to collaborate with them and you have to say, well, why won't this work? Could you pull something and have them say, no, it won't.
Beth, I'm hearing the same type of advice, right?
It's a rare situation. Usually the accounting office is off to some side of the production office or like the furthest away from the door. You walk in and there's always a ton of people shoved into a small space. Very rarely do they come out from under their numbers and their computer. And, you know, it takes someone who really has an understanding of the workings of TV shows and movies to have someone who's willing to be that face forward of their department and talk to people, because it is so collaborative.
It sounds like what we talk about all the time, what you tell all of our listeners about relationships and how important it is to not hide in your office and have everybody be scared of you, but definitely come out and learn what other people are doing and have those relationships. Andy, I don't want to toot Beth's horn for her, but I will. We know that Beth prides herself on not going over budget on a job. Surely there's been some bad situations.
Sure.
Well, look, it is my, you know, every set decorator has their bent. I respect the budget being a pivotal part of the overall project. Like, you have to respect the script and serve the script. By saying I've never been over budget on a job, you know, at this point, I can tell them what a job's going to cost pretty much within $10. I don't want to go over budget. To me, my job is more than picking out a pretty sofa or drapes, and it's more than decorating. It's fulfilling the requirements of the entire job. And now more than ever, the budget is could be number one as far as what's required of me.
That sounds like a lofty goal, is to have everything you need but stay within budget. You guys must have some horror stories. I know, Beth, maybe you are so good, but Andy, certainly there must have been some stories about overruns on a production. There must have been some craziness.
Well, there always is. the thing is that it's a push and a pull for the creative. It right. always is, because everyone is hired based on their reel. Everyone is hired based on their last experience, including me, by the way. So you want always to be fabulous. I said earlier that it's about balance. You can't give all of the money to the costume department and then give no money to the set decorators, because the film will look off. We've all seen films that look like that, that look bad because they overspent on one thing and underspent on another thing. To me, when you're going over budget, and it happens, it's really about creating the balance that says, okay, well, they really needed that, and it did put us over budget, but we created that budget long ago, before the machine started. And, filmmaking is, it's art, right? So it's an evolution. So you have to learn that today it's about this, but tomorrow it could be about, your film could be about something else.
And it's an evolution of information. When Andy starts and the budget's being done, and I go through this a lot with LA-based people who don't understand that in New York, what we are responsible for as a set decorator is very different in Los Angeles. We even, many years ago, created a document that went through every category you could think of, from appliances to street dressing to greens to all kinds of areas that the set decorator here is involved in. And in Los Angeles, it's very different. In Los Angeles, the locations department is responsible for some things that Set Deck in New York is responsible for. And the Teamsters are responsible for picture cars, where the prop master here is responsible for them. And when a job is budgeted in LA, they come here and they have like three set dressers for the whole job. And once we start to provide that information, and once things materialize and get clear, it evolves again to usually adding, not subtracting. So
always adding.
Yeah.
Well, in New York, for sure. In New York, for sure.
Always, right? New York's always so expensive. Andy, are you involved with like the initial budget on a job? Like, do you sit down and try to do that before, long before you even get on set?
Always. You can be hired after the initial pass budget is done, but I prefer to be hired and do the initial budget and then do the show afterwards. So just because it's easier if you were involved in that initial process. I mean, Beth is making a great point that if an LA producer does a budget for New York, they don't understand that it's a much bigger thing to move in New York. So it takes more set dressers to move. They do additional work. So they don't understand the scale of what that is. And then when they get to New York, they're shocked because they're like, well, this puts us over budget. And of course, producers are very concerned about that because you're one of the three people that's hired by the studio. So you're one of the three people who's yelled at by the studio. Oh, right? No.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be yelled at. And in that three-legged chair, you don't want to have to go to the creative and say, I know you hate bottle episodes, doesn't everybody? But we need one. We need
now two. We know, listeners. I think that's that's super interesting. And I'm glad our listeners are getting a chance to hear that. Like, when we see a bottle episode, now all of us, we're in the know. We can say, oh, they're having a little budget issue. Now I see why they're doing that. Like, I love that. That's a real behind the scenes little bit of info that I didn't ever know why they did a bottle episode. So that's fascinating.
It's really important. Every department has to acquiesce, and every department has to pitch in. What Andy's saying is the balance overall, and especially the visual balance between the art department, set decoration department, costumes, DP, and locations is really important, because if one stands out, the audience is so trained now and so acute and watching things and binging everything and going back and looking for mistakes. You really
can
do
you tell
notice
Beth
it.
Thinks about this, Andy?
Well, I hear from all of you.
Well, it would torch me.
Oh yeah, it's so hard to watch. You know, when something like that happens, when we know it's coming.
I did the show High Fidelity in Chicago, and I'm doing Bear, which also shoots in Chicago. So people who I worked with in the late 90s are calling me and saying, hey, you know, you want to go out for dinner or whatever. And the set decorator, Larry Lundy, called me and said, Andy, I want to take you to dinner. And I said, sure, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we chatted, and he said, you know, I want to tell you, he's a professor, I think, at Northwestern now. And he said, I want to tell you that you told me one of the most important things of my career. And I was a little shocked because, you know, he's been around a long time. He became a production designer and whatnot. And he said, you told me to stop giving the number that I thought that the producer wanted to hear and to give the number that was the real number.
Yep.
And it's such an important lesson. And he said that he teaches it in his class because it's so easy for a creative department head to say, okay, I'll do it for the $50,000 that you said I had.
And then it becomes impossible. And
because it becomes impossible.
Yeah. And you don't look good. It's a hard pill to swallow, but I am always telling them realistically, this is what it's going to cost, even if I bring stuff from home, even if I get favors.
I love that part.
And that's really smart, Beth. That's really smart because you want it to be successful, the project as a whole. Of course, you want your own department to be successful, but you want it to be a hit. You know, yeah. So how do you do that? How do you make sure that everybody knows in advance this is really what it's going to cost unless we change something?
Beth, my favorite story you've told our listeners is how when you were looking for the tchotchke kind of side in The Good Wife, how you went to the pottery studio and asked for anything that was never picked up. And so they just gave you these odds and ends pieces of pottery that you could put in Alicia's, I think you said bathroom or on her nightstand or something
in
looked
her bathroom.
Like her kids had made them.
Yeah.
And that was so smart. So smart. I can imagine stuff like that, you know, where you get things like that for free and you can, you know, just kind of figure out this way more creative way. Andy, for you, I mean, how do you deal with those types of issues when you have to get real creative? There must be challenging issues all the time. Does it tend to be like big star salaries or unions, or what tends to be your challenge area?
You know, when you're a production accountant, you create that budget, but really you're creating a template for the show. If you say there's going to be 10 set dressers a week, then you have to watch for the anomaly and see why you're working with 15. And it can be a real challenge because you have to manage it away, you know, with all of the tools, all the other managers in on the show, all the other department heads. So the star salaries, the bigger the star, the more money you have because you're able to fundraise for more money. The more challenging projects are the projects that don't have stars attached or have a star who doesn't bring money, who isn't sellable in the foreign market, is a name but isn't sellable for a show. Those are the harder projects to do because you have less money always, but they're a name. So you have to give them a reasonable amount of money for them to do your show because nobody wants to do it for free. Lots of shows that are independent movies will have a few people who will make $250, and then they'll have you know, they'll have two or three people that make 250 or 150, and then they'll have a bunch of people who will make scale SAG salary, which is like $5,000 a week or $1,000 a day. So superstars will come in and work for that weekly salary if it's a big enough stars for the other categories. But if you have a B-level star in your main role, it's going to be hard to get other people to sign on. The name stars are not going to sign on for somebody who has a lower star level, I guess. It's very difficult because the agents run them all. You know, they're,
it's they amazing have how many details you have to be aware of. Andy, I know you have credits as a producer and production manager. Is that a natural transition from accounting? Is it it's something you're looking to do more of in the future?
Producing is a very different role than an accountant role. I love being an accountant. I love being a collaborator. I love making films. I love making television shows. I particularly love pilots. I love creating that template that becomes something that lasts for 5 or 20 years. Producing is a funny thing because it's a title that everyone wants, but you're actually not as involved in making the product as the set decorator would be or the production designer would be.
Hence the concept that sometimes we joke about producers' credits being given out like Pez. You know, they're easily gotten. The real nuts and bolts is the production accountant. You know, through the years, I'd say some of my best friends in the film business are production accountants because, you know, it's just that I love the way they think, the logic, and the organizational mind really speaks to me.
Well, that's nice. Thank you. You know, you're also welcome. With the job comes a lot of really difficult, high-level processing bookkeeping. It's a big part of the job. So, you know, once all of the fun stuff is done, then all of a sudden you're responsible for paying all the bills and paying, you know, spending millions of dollars and managing the cash flow of that for the next 10 or 20 or 40 weeks. And it's a very stressful job and a really responsible job. You know, so it's nice to have allies.
I mean, always for a set decorator to have an accountant as an ally, you know, think about it. I mean, our job is demanding and vendors and things that we have to procure. It's like a every minute changing kind of situation. If they change the shooting schedule, all that we had scheduled for the next day to pick up changes to something else. And we're always in this kind of emergency mode, needing that check or that wired money or something from the accounting department. So there's a lot of crossover. It's so important to have someone who really understands what you're trying to do in the time that you're trying to do it. With the industry being affected by strikes and budgets being reduced and so much work going overseas, how do you see the future of our wonderful film and television business?
I think that the industry is going to have a rebirth. It's scary and it's exciting at the same time because there's an evolution right now where I believe more films are going to be made. And I think that that's really exciting because lots of people do television because it's a long-term job. But there's so many people that are in the industry because it is the arts. They want to create that one film. So that's exciting that there's more film projects that are happening. In the last year, I've probably done 20 budgets for films. The television side is really scary. I mean, it's really, really scary. It's television and streaming because they're making 50% less shows. And that means that 50% of the people are not going to work, or whatever, 30% of the people are not going to work and are going to be leaving the industry. And we haven't even gotten yet to the bankruptcies. I see big companies going bankrupt, selling, consolidating. And that's scary. But I think that whenever there's adversity, there's creativity. Netflix has a division that does independent romantic comedies, basically. So they're making Lifetime movies. It's really easy and fun and everybody's working. It's great that they're making all of these products, but there aren't that many people watching. And so we need to drive people to watch the shows, and we do that through innovation. And that's exciting to me.
I love that, Andy. I know that you, like Beth, have a long history in the industry. So from your point of view, how do you think the business has changed the most? We talk a lot with Beth about the days of beepers and trying to, you know, use like payphones and stuff to like reach people. So how has your job changed the most, do you think?
I love that Beth remembers all those things because I remember them too. And I love those days.
But yeah, we're not old.
But I think that technology is changing the industry so fast. I mean, I remember when you only shot on film. If you shot on video, you were like low rent. You were considered, you know, a whole different class of filmmaker.
Yep.
And today, everything is digital. I think I've shot film once in the last 5 years. And it wasn't a great decision, by the way, on the film that we shot film. I think that the technology evolution is happening. I think that the accounting business has changed because the bookkeeping has become more streamlined. And that means that the work is a little bit easier for us because we've divvied it up to some of the departments to handle. It's affected the finances of the film in a bad way because all of a sudden everybody has a P card, which is a company credit card. But that by them using that stops me from being able to manage the cash flow of the film. So it's
but
not
you
like
can track have, us everywhere we go.
We can track you everywhere you go and yell at you for buying Starbucks. But
yeah. Can you imagine you like be like buy something a second later, you look at your phone, and it's like Andy calling, you're like, oh my God, he already saw.
Oh, he knows where I've been.
Oh gosh, that's awesome. Oh my gosh.
Oh, I'll tell you, that makes me think of my most horror story in terms of dealing with accounting. Not myself, but we've had credit cards now for many years. And of course, you're carrying around your credit card and the production's credit card. And I always say to anyone who works for me, carry two different wallets, carry two different little zipper cases. Don't get caught using your show credit card for something personal. So I'll never forget the day I got called into the production manager's office about a manicure pedicure on my assistant's show credit card. What does this have to do with set decorating, Beth? Anyway, that was the end of that personal assistant. Because it just was, you know, like really the straw that broke the camel's back. But, you know, not only was it a mani-pedi, but it was a wax. It was, you know, and was there a receipt? No receipt. So, you know, it was the days in which you had to produce receipts for everything. Now everything is online. You don't keep any of those receipts anymore. You load them up online. But of the one thing that I said, the simplest thing, of course, you know, didn't happen. And that was like one of my most embarrassing moments that involved a production manager and accountant.
Well, I think that that's hilarious because every project, whether it's a studio project or an independent project, every project is set up as its own company.
Right.
So, and this is like nerdy, but the reason why they do that is because if that company is sued for whatever reason, it's a standalone company. So there's no assets attached to it. So because of that, and because of the freelance nature of the film business, there's a lot of things that happen that are, you know, not nice things. There's a lot of theft. There's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of things that there are checks and balances put in place to stop from happening because, you know, you want to spend the money on your film. The credit card business is one of the things that was a big problem for so long because people would buy stuff and return it and get a credit, you know, a gift card and all kinds of crazy things used to happen. And that's how they stopped it, was saying, okay, well, we're going to give P cards. And then you have all of this stuff that happens. And by the way, lucky that it was only a mani-pedi. I've seen much, much crazier
things. I'm sure you have. So lately in the news, is a lot of negativity and just a lot of drawing to attention the tax incentives happening in many different states trying to bring film production in. Are you in favor, or do you think in the end it doesn't really make a difference?
I've been around since the 90s. And in the early 2000s, we had what everyone called runaway production. And basically what happened was it was cheaper to make a show in Canada than it was to make in the United States. And every project was going out of the country. So like a good citizen that I am and crazy person, I wrote letters to every single congressman and senator saying, please tax films when they come back into the country. And I did that because if you make your film in France and then you distribute it through Disney, the only tax that they have when it comes back in is the cost of that film, not the cost of making the film, the cost of the film. So maybe it costs $5,000 to purchase that film. So there's no tax when it's imported. So when I wrote the letter, I wrote thinking that somebody could hear me and they would start making an import tax on films that got made out of the country and then brought in and distributed by us. Because it's one of the only industries that the United States owns, music and entertainment. We own it. A year or two later, incentives started happening. And that was amazing because it essentially did the same thing. It gave money to the projects to bring the cost of the films down. And it's significant. 30%, 25%, some states are 40%. It made us more competitive as a country. And that was great. Here we are, the states are not in such great financial health. And there are a number of delays that are happening to give the money back to the films. So instead of getting your money back in a year, it might take 5 years to get your incentive back. And what's happening is that incentive, the studios don't have bank loads of money. They take loans and they sell bonds, and that's how they cash flow it. So when they cash flow those incentives, now they're paying 7% and 8% for 5 years on the money that's being given back by the states. So they're losing 40% of their incentive money to loans. And that's hurting us a lot. It's really hurting us. So, and it's stopping films from coming to states like New York who slowed down the return. That's big. And if you're working like in Mexico, they refund your VAT tax, which is like just your tax. The same thing happens in Canada. So you fill out a bunch of forms and you send them in, and 6 months later, they give you the cash back. That delay is only 6 months compared to five years. That's
big. Is there anything that can be done to get them to speed up the process?
We're all working on it. You know, I have lots of meetings with studios about it. I have lots of meetings with producers about it to say, well, how can we speed it up? Part of it is a funding issue. And even though the states might have approved it, they are not funding that program yet. So there's a delay in it. So that can happen. Part of it is they create a bureaucracy in the review process to purposely slow it down. So, you know, you try to work on that. But what I am experiencing is that states are being denied, and it's crazy. It's great, particularly states like New York and New Jersey who have competing rebates. It used to be Hawaii and Puerto Rico had competing rebates. Puerto Rico stopped doing their incentive. They're trying to get it back, but they stopped. So it becomes very difficult because the studios are money making. They're all about the money.
It's such a clean industry, and it brings so much money into the state, into a neighborhood that you're shooting in. It's really a good industry for a state to have and to try to support.
I worked in Puerto Rico, and I loved working there. I thought the crew was fantastic. I did 3 projects there, and I thought the crew was fantastic. I thought that they had lots of different location looks, you know, city, urban, rural, European. And I thought it was great to work there. The problem there is that as a territory, they don't understand that we're a manufacturing business, that you don't have to have all year. All you have to do is give us a little bit of money and we'll come and shoot there. And then all of a sudden, you're supporting a manufacturing industry, which is you know, a middle class, working class industry. And all of that money gets dumped right into the community. Right. So it's like, it's a whip. It's a whip. If you're manufacturing light bulbs, you have a lot of product that's being made in other places and bringing it in. And so you don't have 100% of that money going into that community. So, you know, it's a huge opportunity for states that they just keep missing. They just keep missing. I mean, it's a big spend, so it's a big commitment.
You guys, we got so serious. This feels so heavy now.
Sorry.
We were having such a lighthearted conversation. But this is true. I mean, these are the nuts and bolts. Yeah, and yes. This is the nuts and bolts of running the industry. This is what it's really about. No. But honestly, like, so going back to your job, Andy, do you feel like job has become more difficult? Do you feel over the years now, going back to like my original question about how it's changed? Do you feel like it's more difficult now or more complicated than it used to be?
Incentives have made the job more complicated. Lots of states like California doesn't have an incentive for every project. So it's easier to be an accountant in Los Angeles. If you're in an incentive state, there's a lot more oversight and there's a lot more requirements to complete in order to get that free money. So I think it is more complicated and so it's more difficult. In a way, it's more fun too, though, because
it gives you more to play with.
Yeah. You guys seem like problem solvers always, that all the jobs in the industry feels like problem solving jobs. But on a more lighthearted note, do you have a genre that you enjoy doing more, Andy, than another? Or is there one that's more thorny to budget for?
Well, I tried to work every genre and every type of filmmaking. So I wanted to work on a sitcom, which is a multicam, and I wanted to work on reality, and I wanted to work on films, and I wanted to work on television. I particularly love comedy, and I think that they're really fun, and I think that I love the looseness of the script. I once did a project with Wong Kar Wai called My Blueberry Nights. And he is a Chinese filmmaker, and he's known for having many, many layers in the art department and the costumes. When you watch his films, it's like eating cotton candy. You know, you're just kind of addicted to all of the set dressing and all of the paint and all of the work that the creatives have put into it. But ultimately, he is about the story and the actor. And this project didn't have a script. So lots of people wanted to make his film because he was a famous director. And so when the American actors realized that there was no script, they didn't want to do the job because they only wanted to read the lines, deliver the lines, and get the coverage, which was fascinating to me. And that show was a drama. And he said that it's not like that in China. That in China, the actors embody the spirit of the character. And because of that, they improvise more. And that's something that I loved. I thought it was fascinating. I'm a follower of theater and soap operas and all of those kinds of genres too. So I think that comedy is the closest in the regular scripted television, scripted drama form of being in engaging in only your character, creating that character and owning it. And I love that.
Andy, that is so great. I think you have shown everyone how many layers there are of all the people that we've talked to in our five seasons. I don't think anyone has thought about outside the crafts. You know, we've covered all the different crafts within the art department and set deck department and different directors, and it doesn't sound like a glamorous thing to be the head accountant, the controller for television or movies, but it is the most essential, vital part of making a film, making a TV series. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's been really fun.
I feel like Andy really breathed some life into accounting, honestly,
yes.
Because it seems like I'm scared of numbers completely. And I feel like Andy actually made it sound like fun. Like I was like, maybe I would enjoy
being an
accountant.
And that it's a really creative, constantly creative, changing job.
Yeah. Like, it's very dynamic. And there's a lot, like you said, getting out of that office and getting a chance to walk around and work with the departments. That's very different. I'm like sitting there thinking, Andy with the abacus, like working the numbers, like how terrible that would be for me. But Andy, this is fascinating. I'm very interested in your job.
Who knew you would do that?
Andy? You're like magic. You made me interested in math. That's a hard job.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And by the way, it's fun to offer all of the choices to people. And it's interesting to see what they choose. Because it's not you who's choosing. They're choosing. The creatives are choosing. So you're just offering it up and they're making a choice. You know, sometimes I say, are you sure?
Nice. You're like in Barbie, right? You're like, you're supposed to choose the Birkenstock. Like, excellent.
That's right.
I love it.
That's right.
Very good. Andy, thank you so much for talking with us today. You certainly gave us a different glimpse behind the curtain here and let us know how these movies and TV shows are made. I know we're all going to look at bottle episodes differently, right, Beth? We're going to be like, oh my gosh, we know what's going on in this production. So that's amazing. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
A big thank you to Andy for making time to speak with us and deep diving into accounting, into production, how it starts. You know, it's so fascinating. He's on the job very early and he sees the whole thing come together, and he is a major player and a participator in everything that we do. And now with budget constraints and time constraints, his job is even more critical than ever. So I thank him for joining us.
He was a fantastic guest. We're so happy he got to join us. And I hope our listeners got some different ideas maybe for their own career path or some new appreciation for how much goes into making a television show or film. That's going to do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to Decorating the Set from Hollywood to Your Home at Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Please leave a 5-star review. It helps a lot in promotion of the show. 5 stars, people. Thanks for listening.
Decorating the Set from Hollywood to Your Home is an original Pod Clubhouse production, recorded, edited, and produced at Pod Clubhouse Studios. For more information, please visit us online at podclubhouse.com. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to Decorating the Set at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening.